football on off the ball.
Got away with his words. He's a good coach, but he's a really, really nice man as well. And I think for me, at least, that can sometimes be even more important, you know.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Very good morning to Enda Cole, who's with me as well. Good morning, Enda.
Morning, Shane. How are you?
Keep it well. And Dara Smith-Nocton. Morning, Dara.
Shane.
There's a photograph on the back page of the Indo of Jack Moylan, lads, walking off last night, head in the hands, high and low for Moylan. Jack Moylan leaves the pitch just before half-time, having been shown a red card earlier. Moylan had taken the free kick, which set up Nathan Collins to score the only goal of the game in their victory over Qatar. I watched this game last night and I'll never get that time back in my life, I don't think. It was quite poor, but in the first half, Jack Moylan was one of those standout players, if you could say that. And then what happened at half time with him being sent off was just a bit silly from the referee.
Yeah, I quite liked watching him and Troy play off each other in that first half. Obviously gets the assist as well for Nathan Collins' goal. It's an extremely harsh red card, particularly when it's a friendly. Just leave it off. I think it was Kenny on comms as well, was saying even Qatar don't want that to be a red card, because they want to play against 11 men. They want to actually have a proper test here. And it just felt like a bit of, how do you say, the referee was making it about himself a little bit, I think. But I think even in a regular game, it's a harsh red card.
Yeah.
I don't see how it's straight red. I presume there was no VAR on the day.
No VAR.
So he made an on the spot decision, but yeah. And then I felt like he was evening up the game as well with the red card later on as well.
I don't think
that was a red card either, to be honest. it's just a strange one. Yeah. Really strange one.
Both very soft. I thought Jack Moylan was fantastic in his short time on the pitch. It looked exactly the player that we kind of hoped to see playing for Ireland, what we're sort of missing in that link between midfield and the forward line. Linked up well with Troy Parrott, and also just shows confidence on the ball, presses well, isn't afraid to take a chance, and then that dead ball delivery. Like, we are blessed with good set piece takers, but to add another to the list is also very, very nice. But yeah, I don't know. I don't think Heimer Hallgrimsson will hold it against them.
No.
Because it was soft. It was actually referee Jamie Robinson. He's a Northern Irish referee. Many people joked and laughed the fact that the entire referee list last night was from Northern Ireland, and they managed to send off Jack Moylan early on. And it was actually his last game as a FIFA referee was that for Jamie Robinson.
That's his mark.
He made his mark. A lot of people who are fans of the Irish League were commenting that nobody should be surprised by this decision, because I don't believe that Jamie Robinson is seen as too popular a referee up there.
He's only 31 years of age. I was looking into it last night, but he started refereeing in 2008 at the age of 14.
He refereed like under 10 games.
Presumably, yeah.
International matches.
No, he wasn't refereeing huge games. But yeah, I thought it just ruined the game completely. Not that it was a spectacular spectacle, for want of a better phrase, before that either. But
I didn't think it was too bad before that, honestly. Maybe.
It was all right,
The first 15-20 minutes of that game, Ireland were pressing up much higher than I expected to. A bit of zip in the passing as well. Obviously, when the red card happens and then the second half, there's a lot of changes from Qatar. They made 5 changes at one point. So Ireland ended up playing a completely different outfit in the second half than it did in the first. But outside of that, I thought it was grand for what it was, an international friendly against Qatar ahead of the World Cup that we're not playing in.
Yeah, and Qatar put out a pretty weak team by their own standards as well.
Making so many subs, like the 5 subs at once and then the 4 subs. You're like, this is an absolute friendly game for them.
They're looking at it from a different perspective, I suppose, aren't they? It's a warm up.
Look, for the fans, what is it? Just under 29,000 fans were there last night, and they probably got their money's worth when they saw the Irish lineup coming in, because it was definitely a stronger lineup than I was expecting to see. And then to see a few first caps off the bench as well was brilliant. Jade Numa speaking after the match, like, he was just so happy. All of the first caps were so, so happy. And grateful, and Ringmahon Rangers, obviously Jaden Numa's boyhood club, the same as Caoimhín Kelleher, were name checked a couple of times last night. It was a strange one, though. But like, in terms of the outstanding performers from an Irish perspective, Liam Scales, I think, picked up the TV man of the match. You'll have seen a lot of him end of this season. Celtic, quite a season they've had. But yeah, probably one of the standout performers.
Yeah, I thought he was decent. It was a typical Liam Scales performance. He's not used to that left wing back position since his time at Shamrock Rovers. It was actually surprising when he moved from Shamrock Rovers that Celtic seemed to be buying him as a centre half, because he had spent so much time playing in that wing back position for Stephen Bradley. But moved into centre half, I was more surprised when James Abankwa came on the pitch that Liam Scales wasn't pushed into the centre back role and Abankwa moved into the wing back role, because I think he has a little bit more pace and physicality about him than Liam Scales does. But I guess the idea was always that Abankwa can also play a centre half. Liam Scales wasn't going to play the full second half, so it probably made sense to keep him there. But as Kenny Cunningham alluded to on the show, on the commentary on the night, it was just a typical Liam Scales performance in that he doesn't do anything fancy, he doesn't take too many risks, he does the defensive stuff correctly, and then he keeps it simple, which is sort of what you want from an Irish centre-back.
Does he start in a big game, whenever the next big game is for Ireland? Because you obviously have Ryan Mannen, who's had a pretty amazing season for Southampton. Like, does he start in a back five?
Against bigger sides that we want to play a little bit more defensively, I think he's a good option.
Yeah.
As we saw last night, not only is he a better option defensively than Ryan Manning, but he also provides that out ball that if we want to play a long diagonal ball, he's much better in the air to winning those battles.
Yeah.
And we can get up the pitch a little bit better. Sounds counterproductive that Ryan Manning doesn't provide a better option going forward, but if we're back to the walls and we want to play a long ball, Liam Scales probably is that better option at left wing back.
Yeah, I'd agree, yeah.
I enjoyed listening to Jamie McGrath chatting to Ben Symes, a reporter there last night as well. Like, really fascinating story he's had as well, and obviously playing with Hibs at the moment too, and getting his minutes into the legs. And he got the call from in Malaga Airport, and he was heading over with a few of his teammates when he got the call from Hemmer to come into the squad late. And he said, well, he dropped everything. He said he'd always take the call from his country and come and join the camp. And he had a long holiday booked with his other half to America, which has had to be curtailed somewhat. These are the commitments these lads put in, you know, in fairness.
And their partners.
And their partners, of course, yeah.
McGrath is another one who, I was surprised he hasn't been in the squad as often as you might like to see, because he is one of the better players in playing in the Scottish League.
Should be in the Scotland squad, according to some people.
Well, he was getting a call up for sure, but he's a fantastic little player. Great. Like, not great on the ball, but like good on the ball, and also works really, really hard, and it has that little bit of bite like, say, Jason Malumbi would. Maybe he doesn't have the physicality to get around the pitch as much as Hamer wants, but I think he's a very safe option. And if the likes of Alan Brown, who's playing the Championship, is making it into the squads, I would be surprised that Jamie McGrath isn't alongside him.
Another of County Meath's Irish internationals as well. Evan Ferguson, among them, Daryl Lennon as well. Like, I don't know what the other talk. Like, Hamer Helgrimson last night after the game, he's kind of talking about, oh, it's a team ranked above us in the FIFA World Rankings. We'll take the FIFA points and we'll take the clean sheet. I know he has to accentuate the positives. I'm thinking of it too negatively, because it was a tough watch at times and the sending off ruined it a bit. But I suppose in some senses it was clean sheet. It was a half decent crowd.
Yeah, like, Qatar never really looked like scoring.
No.
Had a few chances in front of goal, but their shooting was way off it. But yeah, again, as we said, wasn't their strongest team from the start, so I don't know if you can take it as beating a team that's above you in the FIFA rankings, because it just wasn't their strongest starting 11.
No.
But still, like, they won.
Yeah, it's a win. Win's a win.
Yeah.
Carol O'Leary says in the YouTube comments, lads, no Champions League preview in the running order. You're trolling us. I did mention we'll be chatting to Barry Murphy about the Champions League final.
But you didn't mention it early enough, Shane.
No. I should have said it quicker. I had to say the name of the show first and then get to Champions League. We will be talking about the Champions League final around 8:15 or so with Barry Murphy. We wouldn't forget that, in fairness. It's on this weekend, tomorrow afternoon. Will we hear from Hamer Helgrimson? I think he was in conversation as well with Ben Symes after the game last night. And here he is, the Irish manager, speaking to Ben.
If Russia is banned, then I don't see the difference why Israel shouldn't be banned.
I have to ask you about stuff just off the pitch. Obviously, the game got stopped twice in the first half for protests for the Israel game that may come up in the Nations League. Seamus Coleman said in the press conference the other day that he says you have to listen to the will of the nation as well. I don't want to put words in the mouth of the nation, but I think the action show today, maybe some people in the nation don't want this game to go ahead. Do you have any more thoughts on that?
Yeah, I've said what I think. So everybody knows my standing in this. If Russia is banned, then I don't see the difference why Israel shouldn't be banned. I'm on record saying that, so I stand in, to that fact, saying that I need to think, and I'm here to think about the football side of things. Boycotting the game for me would be wrong, because we will be giving them gifts. We will be giving them gifts. That we will be giving them six points. We will be giving them 6-0 in goal difference. So they would qualify from the group. Probably gives them a great chance of qualifying for the Euros that is played here in Ireland. So instead, we probably would go down to League C in the Nations League. Future national teams will suffer for that. So I say we should give everything to win Israel. That's our answer as footballers, to win the game. And if the nation should be so good to help us with that, to win that game, that is just my stand. I need to think about the football side of it.
That was Hamer Hallgrimsson talking to Ben Symes last night. Mm. Thought he answered the question quite well. It's a difficult one for the Irish manager to be asked, and he's going to be asked about it a lot more over the next couple of months before this game happens. If it does happen, you know, there's definitely some murmurings of unsettlement within the FAI and the board, and of course the fan bases in terms of this game going ahead. But look, it's a really tough one for the players. Seamus Coleman, I thought, dealt with it quite well during the week as well. And we mentioned earlier on the week about this and how it's being left up to the individual. Mm. And that really is what is happening here. They're leaving it up to the players and the manager to decide, well, do we give up 6 points and potentially damage our future, or do we play this game and just get on with it? And I don't think that's right. Can I go on a little bit of a tangent here, Shane?
You can't. Take the floor.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to ask you, do you recycle?
I do recycle.
Yeah. And would you judge someone who doesn't recycle?
No.
No. But you think people should generally recycle?
I think they should.
Like reduce the carbon footprint.
Yeah. I wouldn't judge them unless it was, you know, purpose or something. But yes, absolutely. Would people say should recycle.
Yeah. Would you say that some people would judge people who don't recycle or don't care about the environment and don't care about pollution?
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Yeah. In 1971, an ad came out in America, and it was actually parodied in The Simpsons, but it featured a Native American and all the trash that was being left in the national parks in America and across America, and it featured a teardrop coming down his eye and how we're destroying our great nation and all this here. And it was, the tagline of it was, people start pollution, people can stop it. So it was very powerful at the time, won awards, and it was all about cleaning up the neighbourhood and cleaning up trash and stopping pollution. People stop pollution. It was funded by Keep America Beautiful. That's who made the ad. Do you know who funded Keep America Beautiful?
I don't.
Coca-Cola, PepsiCo, and other companies that made the exact plastic that was polluting the place that these ads were talking about.
Mm.
Okay. In 2004, the idea of a carbon footprint was born. Do you know who came up with the idea of a carbon footprint?
I don't.
British Petroleum. The second largest private oil company in the world. With the help of PR firms, they invented the carbon footprint. They invented the carbon footprint calculator so that people could track their daily consumption as they go to work, when they go traveling, so that people can get an idea behind how much they're causing the climate crisis. And the idea behind it was to, again, place the blame on the individual. And I see very, very similar stuff happening here with the Israel situation and this match in general. The FIFA, UEFA, the FAI, to an extent, I don't blame the FAI as much as I do UEFA and FIFA, but they are breaking their own rules by allowing Israel to continue to play international football. As Hallgrimsson says there, Russia are not allowed to play for the exact reason that Israel are currently allowed to play. They are breaking their own rules because Israel is an occupying country. They are occupying the West Bank. That is a documented fact, and that goes against the UEFA charter. So they should not be allowed to play international competitions. This is an international competition. It's not a friendly. It's the Nations League. It's a UEFA competition. They are breaking their rules. And the problem I have with this is that they are leaving this up to the individual. Because now, when Ireland don't boycott it, because that looks like what is going to happen, they're leaving it up to the players and the manager to make that decision. Inevitably, we will see backlash, or not so much on the Irish players, but the narrative will be the players should boycott this game. The players should make this decision. And it's not a player decision. It's a organisation decision.
Comes from higher up.
Yeah.
Have to say, I agree. Some of the comments says, don't forget the migrant workers who were killed in Qatar shouldn't have played them either. Now, should we? No, we probably shouldn't have. But sports watching works, and we had the World Cup in Qatar, and we're not talking about Qatar's migrant worker issues or anything else, or their record on human rights or women's rights. Yeah, like last night was a strange one, because when you saw the tennis balls coming out, you're thinking, oh, they're going to do this every 10 minutes, especially when it came out after 20 minutes. I was thinking, and this is a very valid and powerful enough protest to continue stopping the game. Richie Sadler on TV last night spoke very eloquently, I thought, really, really eloquently, in that he painted a picture of what exactly the home game against Israel will look like if there's a crowd and if the game goes ahead. He pointed over to the flagpole and says, that flagpole over there, there's going to be an Israel flag flying over across that. Over the tannoy here in this stadium, there's going to be the Israeli national anthem playing. There are going to be dignitaries in the box up there. We don't know what Israeli dignitaries will be there. Potentially Catherine Connolly, our president, will be there as she normally is to shake hands with both sets of players. Is she supposed to shake hands with Israeli players who are from a country that kept her sister hostage quite recently? So he just painted a good picture as to how, in my mind, this game is impossible. Like in front of a crowd, there's every chance this game takes place behind closed doors. I just cannot see any universe in which this game takes place in front of Irish fans. Any fans that do go, some fans would protest by not going, some fans would protest by going and engaging in some form of peaceful protest. But I just cannot see how this game could be allowed to happen. Like Seamus Coleman, I thought, spoke quite well on it during the week, as well as any players can be expected to speak on it. Hamer Hallgrimsson coming out there, and generally he does speak really well on it, but he says boycotting would be wrong and would be giving them the gifts of 6 points. Give them the gifts, as far as I'm concerned. Let them have the six points. Will Irish football suffer going down to League C? I don't know, maybe. But does it matter in the grand scheme of things? Probably not. So all this all talk about, oh, we should play them on the pitch and take the 6 points off them, or at least attempt to. I don't really buy that.
Yeah. Like, I studied history and politics in college, and this is just one example, but I'm growing extremely concerned about the presence of certain people in football, but in sport in general. And you look at the Club World Cup, and Donald Trump is on the stage with the Chelsea players. This coming World Cup is obviously in America, and he's heavily involved in the promotion of it. And I think we're getting to a really, really scary place where a game with Israel, whether it's played behind closed doors or wherever, or even if we give them the 6 points and they continue on in the Nations League and get further in it, it's becoming extremely normal to see them in sporting events. You talk about Russia being banned from all, you know, from the Olympics and from different sports for years, and in some cases still banned. I think that's the way to go about it. With Israel, like, Shane, I know you studied history as well, didn't you?
Yeah.
It's extremely upsetting to see what's going on obviously, but it's just a repeat of history. But I've never seen something so horrible been made so normal, not since Nazi Germany, to be honest.
Yeah.
I know this is a sports show and you don't want to get too deep into politics and stuff, but I think I'm growing extremely concerned as to where we're going. I think America, you know, there's a real case for us to boycott a game with them if we do play them in the near future. There's a part of me that's glad we're not going to the World Cup.
Yeah.
In a weird way, obviously I want to see my team play a World Cup, but I want absolutely no part in what's going on at the minute in football. I think it's a disgrace. I think Infantino's a disgrace. FIFA's a disgrace. UEFA are a disgrace. It gets me quite emotional, to be honest, because, as I say, it's something I studied and care about, and it's transgressing what it should be, and it does have a real influence, because in 5-10 years it will become normal to play Israel, regardless of whether their colonial quest continues, and, you know, the talk of greater Israel and their plans for the wider setting of the Middle East, whether that continues or not. I feel like this will only get worse unless people start to stand up, and that comes from the government. That doesn't have to come from the players, as Enda said. Like, that should come from way higher up, and there's a severe lack of backbone in sport in general these days.
I do think it's important to note as well that it didn't used to be this way.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
that can get lost in a lot of this conversation. The same. I don't want to compare the two situations in terms of the seriousness of it, but in the same way as people have almost forgot what football was like before VAR and before re-refereeing, people have forgotten what sport was like
pre-politics.
Getting directly involved in it. And I'm not naive enough to think that sport wasn't political before. It always has been political, but it was few and far between. It wasn't always a main talking point. Whereas now almost every sports story comes with the caveat of this is the geopolitical impact of it. Yeah. And people in the comments are already saying that, you know, the geopolitical stories and sports don't mix, but they are intertwined now.
Yeah.
They always haven't. They haven't always been, but they are now. And that's
well,
that's
like, you look at the Olympics in 1936.
Yeah.
Like, I think sport and politics, when nations got brought into sport, that's when the politics relationship started. I don't think you can separate the two. We're all human. We view sport, but we view politics as well. Politics has an impact on everything. It has an impact on where games are played, what players can play for a team. I think they're intertwined, and I think I do get the thing of that, you know, sport is supposed to be an escape and it shouldn't cross over every time you speak about sport, but when there's something as important as standing up in a time like this comes up, then I think you can't just ignore it.
And what are we supposed to do the week of the match? Like, where we ordinarily would, as sports broadcasters, preview a game of football on its footballing merits, like we would talk about who's the Irish starting 11 going to be, and you know, who's going to pick up who, and who would you like to see get more minutes. How are we supposed to talk about that week?
We're not going to get Israeli football journalists to give us the spiel.
Exactly. And we're not going to talk about the football. We won't be interested in talking about the football. Well, speaking for me personally, certainly. Even to have in the news the last couple of days, two of our sports ministers have come out already and said that they will not attend the upcoming match between the Republic of Ireland and Israel. Like, sports ministers who are quite happy to stick the boot in when it comes to flares, for example, in the League of Ireland. And like, all of a sudden they're like, oh, they'd expect the Israel game to go ahead. We won't go, though. We won't be there. So like, it's almost like they're not wanting to face the music. Like, if the game goes ahead, sports ministers should be there. You should own it. You know, if you're calling for this game to go ahead, then you should own it and be there. Yeah, it's not going to go anytime soon. We're not going to solve it, obviously, this time on a Friday morning. No. But definitely worth speaking about, particularly with the protest last night that took place at the VB Stadium.
We move on to a more feel-good story.
Yes, please.
So we don't get stuck in this. So many people would have seen our interview with the lads from the FTD. They were running 33 marathons in 33 days.
Front page of the window there.
An amazing story. They're doing it because their mum was diagnosed with a type of Alzheimer's that is degenerative, and it's cellular, so it is passed on through generations, and both brothers have been diagnosed. They have the gene, so they're inevitably going to get it probably in the next 10, 15 years, which is incredible that some, like, how quickly life can change for them. But they decided to make the best of it.
Yeah.
And Dari, you were actually there when they yeah. finished yesterday.
Yeah, I was at the finish line in Marion Square. Thousands turned out for it. It was amazing. And people that don't know, I'm sure a lot of people have seen it, though. They've undertook a 33-day marathon challenge. So 33 marathons back to back, starting with the London City Marathon. And then they did a marathon in each county in Ireland. Their mum, Geraldine, is from Ireland. She passed away about 10 years ago. So they wanted to come back to Ireland and, I suppose, in a way, reconnect with their Irish roots, because they would have lost that. They've lost 12 Irish relatives to the same form of dementia. It's absolutely awful. But they, as you say, Andy, they managed to make a positive out of the grief that they've shared. And yeah, people were following them from Antrim to Monaghan Town, Cavan Town, Tipperary. We spoke to them when they were in Tipperary over Zoom. They finished in Dublin there yesterday, and it was an amazing occasion. And I had the chance to speak to them but for about 5 minutes in the evening. I almost felt bad taking up their time. They were absolutely exhausted, but two of the nicest lads you'll ever come across, genuinely. Extremely personable. And yeah, should we play a clip of that interview? Yeah, so we've about 2 minutes here with them, and they're just speaking about the challenge itself and the last month or so and how overwhelming it's been. Congratulations, 33 out of 33 marathons completed. How's that sound?
Thank you. Yeah, it's been a long time in the making. We probably started making plans for the challenge probably around 12 months ago, conversations around it, and then more formally the last kind of 6-9 months. But I think if we'd have even written what the perfect challenge looked like in advance, I don't think we'd have ever imagined what we actually ended up getting. The support from Antrim to Dublin, as my brother said, has just been remarkable, from local communities in the weekdays. The school kids are coming out, the staff are coming out of hospitals, and on the weekend it's just been absolutely bedlam. So a month we'll never forget, best month of my life for sure. And we'll be back for many a holiday, hopefully, as well.
You've connected with so many people across the 32 counties, but also even today with so many people in Marion Square. What's that experience been like?
Yeah, truly overwhelming, to be honest. Like Ian said, I think the scale and the volume of it all is nothing we could have ever imagined. You know, I set about this mission as an advocate 8 years ago, made it my full-time job 2 years ago, made the ultimate sacrifice to chase it with everything I had. And even when you set these campaigns, you have dreams and aspirations to reach as many people as possible, try and captivate as many people's imagination as possible and bring people together. But the way we've been able to kind of get what feels like an entire nation behind us across the counties, and then see so many people together supporting us here in Marion Square this afternoon, was just unbelievable, surreal feeling for sure. And I don't think it was sinking for a long time.
Over 1.5 million raised for Alzheimer's research. I believe you spoke to some important people today after your marathon. How did that conversation go?
Yeah, so 50% of the funds from the campaign go to Alzheimer's Society of Ireland and 50% to our own kind of foundation. And we set that lifetime goal to reach £1 million before we get symptomatic with dementia, and we sailed through 1.5 million on this one, and we hit the million mark after 10 days because the fridge went to viral. So from a financial point of view, we're extremely overwhelmed, and it exceeded expectations, if anything. And yeah, we had the opportunity to pop to the door at the finish there and welcomed by Simon Harris and other ministers, basically. And yeah, very, very privileged to have had that opportunity, and hopefully an ongoing kind of structured meetings in the future to see how we can actually move the needle for people in Ireland. This is challenges about Ireland, it's not about the UK, and how we can improve welfare for families living with a diagnosis of dementia.
Unbelievable. Yeah.
Powerful stuff. And like, you talk about inspirational people, it's probably a word that gets thrown around a bit.
Yeah.
Like, those two lads are genuinely inspirational. I left that room thinking, what am I doing in my life? Like, what am I doing every day? Like, it's absolutely insane. And we probably don't appreciate the task that they've undertaken as well. 33 marathons in 33 days. Is just not good for the body.
No.
It's insane. But even still, like, he, after every race, he's spent the guts of an hour on his feet, particularly Jordan Keane. I don't think did all the marathons with him because he was working a bit, I think. But Jordan, on his feet, greeting people, taking pictures, signing autographs after each marathon. And to be fair to him, he had some amount of media to undertake as well after yesterday. So the two of them are just incredible, incredible human beings. And I believe they're not done. They have a couple more ridiculous challenges coming. They're climbing Kilimanjaro, where Jordan is at least in the near future. And Jordan has run the Chicago Marathon in a few weeks, whenever that is. So
take a rest.
It doesn't stop. It doesn't stop. But I think last night they went out for a pint in Dublin.
So well earned.
Well, yeah. If there's ever an earned pint of Guinness, it was last night for those two lads.
If I go for a walk for 20 minutes, I tell myself I've earned a pint.
Yeah.
Never mind 33 marathon, 33. Like, and the fact that, was it Jordan carried the 25 kilogram fridge on his back during the London Marathon for the first one? Like,
mad stuff.
Incredible.
Apparently, they had Kian mentioned the £1 million aim they had at the start of it, and that really boosted the numbers early on, and they kind of then realised, oh my god, this is blowing up. We had no idea, because that was a lifetime goal, I think he said, but they achieved it halfway through the challenge, which is just incredible. So the support that they've garnered as well has been amazing. Like, I don't know if you've seen in like Monaghan Town when they showed up in Donegal, all the counties, and the support they've gotten has been amazing across Ireland. So it's just one of those feel good stories where everyone's gotten behind these lads and they feel like they're reconnected with Ireland and plan to come back in the near future again.
Yeah. It's just they seem so personable. Obviously, you had the chance to meet them, Dara. So, like, they seem so personable and, like, taking their diagnosis, which is essentially a death sentence, head on, and doing so much to raise awareness for it, to raise money for it, as you said. Claimed the life of their mother at the age of 52. And as you said, 11 other family members, including their aunt and their grandmother. And even to just get the news themselves that they were a carrier of this gene at young ages is quite remarkable.
Yeah.
It's called frontotemporal dementia.
So that's
where the FTD comes from. Jordan's 31 now, so he thinks that within maybe 13, 14 years, he'll start to develop dementia symptoms, which is incredibly sad. But they've obviously turned that into a positive, which
and like he had this amazing speech. So he's just after finishing a marathon, he kind of said at the start of it that he may not be able to articulate himself very well over the next 10 minutes, but he was amazing and he got his point across very well. And he mentioned that, you know, after his mum's diagnosis and then passing, he went down kind of a dark path himself and leaned on alcohol and fell into a depression. And then I think he was saying that it was his sister Kennedy who had the courage to take that test to find out whether she had the gene or not, which is an incredibly scary thing to do.
Yeah.
I think personally, I'd probably just rather find out and down the line at some point, but she had the courage to go and get that test, and that gave the two lads the bravery then to go and find out. Obviously, they got the bad news that they did have that familial gene, but then they decided to turn it into a positive and go out and undertake these challenges, and this has been the most successful of any of them. And as you say, I got the chance to meet them and spend a little bit of time in their company, and they're just amazing lads. And it was funny, my girlfriend Rebecca Shane, I think you're a neighbour of hers,
yeah, Monaghan.
She put me on to these lads a couple months ago. I had no idea about the campaign, and you know, sometimes when you get sent an Instagram post from your girlfriend, you kind of take one look at it. But then she was like, no, Dara, you need to actually properly look at this. And so then we got them on the show. And after, I was like, lads, can I just be a little bit unprofessional, ask you for a quick video for Rebecca? And they're obliging and lovely about it. So two of the most personal lads, as we say. And yeah, I just hope that people continue to get behind them and follow their story, because they do plan to come back to Ireland. And I hope to get the same love and support they have done over the last month, because it's been amazing.
Have you done a marathon, Shane?
Did a marathon. Thanks for asking. And if someone's done a marathon, they'll usually tell you about it. 2015 Dublin Marathon with, I'm ashamed to admit, no training. Did not prepare for it whatsoever. The furthest I'd run in advance was 10 kilometres, which was, I'm not saying that trying to sound, he's so cool, he didn't train.
No, that's what you're doing.
Exactly. That is what you're doing.
Fishing
well,
for,
that's what you take from it.
Fishing for compliments.
Yeah, but it was stupid. You have to train properly.
But you're one of these people, though, I've experienced this with you. I've done fitness challenges with you before. You're one of these naturally quite fit people. Just anyway, you've got the runner's physique and the runner's build and the big lungs.
I love that. I used to do a lot of cross country running when I was younger, and even over COVID and stuff, I was running a lot of 5Ks and 10Ks as everyone was. I would have done Kilimanjaro and a bit of climbing in the Mount Elbert in the Rocky Mountains, which is the tallest mountain in the Rockies. So I like hiking and that sort of thing. I haven't done a lot of it recently, I have to be honest, since becoming a father, but that's another endeavour in itself, to be fair. But you've done a marathon as well.
I've done the marathon. I did the Belfast Marathon a couple of years ago, which is a fantastic marathon. I'd implore anybody to do it, because it is such an interesting one that you run through different areas of the city and you know what part you're in history of it. But I'm not one of those people that's like you, Shane. I'm a big boy who carries a little bit of timber. So the training...
Not that much timber, I don't know, come on.
I would say I'm more of an explosive runner. Like, I'd be more suited to sprinting and to football and the sort of fast twitch muscle groups than the longer term. I was never the fittest. Could never really get that top level fitness. But the marathon training, I remember at one point I looked at my watch when I was right in the middle of it. It was a fitness watch, and my heart rate... I checked my average heart rate and it was like the healthiest it had ever been.
Yeah.
So it definitely works in that aspect. But also horrendous at the same time doing the marathon. Remember, my goal was under 4 hours. And as I came to the last 2 kilometers, I could see the 4 hour pacer behind me. And I was like, as long as I stay in front of him, I've hit my goal. I was cramping and I was tired, but managed to do it.
Fair play.
So...
That's quite
impressive.
That is impressive, especially when you're cramping. Yeah, it's like the Dublin one is tough as well. Like I remember reaching the halfway point, 13 miles, and thinking to myself, I'm supposed to do that again. Like I'm only halfway. This is mental. There's Heartbreak. Is it Heartbreak Hill? It's called. Can't remember exactly where it is. It's near Stillorgan or something. I remember a gentleman who must have been at least 40, 45 years older than me, was like borderline encouraged me up the hill. I was like, I'm done here. And he was like, he was giving it the big one. He was well fit for it. He obviously runs a lot, but
yeah,
I think that's the best part about marathons, or not they're not aloneness, but those sort of community based things where you see it in triathlons or you see it in duathlons or a park run, whatever it is, the sense of community doing these types of things is incredible, and you really see the best side of people. People go out and they give up their time to hand out sweets at the side of marathons, or when you're doing it, there's always people there encouraging you on or helping you out, or if you're struggling, they can, you know, they give you a water or a gel or whatever it is. It's such a buzz that you only get to really experience.
And you're right off it. That as well, don't you? That probably gives you a good 5-10k of adrenaline.
They tell you not to listen to music when you're running a marathon, but I didn't listen to music for the first 5K, just to soak in the atmosphere and then through the
I tried to listen to music and then my headphones died, and I found that was the worst part of it, because I spent like some of it trying to fix the earbuds and stuff.
God.
But I remember do you know what they tell you is, don't run off too quickly, like don't get too involved in the buzz, because you will hit a wall.
Yeah.
And I was so far ahead of my time,
right
about 15, maybe about the 18-20k mark, or around the half marathon time, I was on, probably en route to like a 3:10. I was like, God, I'm flying, I feel fantastic.
I'm so fit.
Hit a wall about 2 kilometers later, and it was just a struggle from there on, because I had gone off way too quickly. And the main thing was, you're trying to get away from the crowd a little bit, because it's so crowded when you're doing it at the start. Mm. But... If anybody in the comments or anybody listening has done a marathon or has done an extreme level of sport, let us know what your experiences have been. 087-9180-180. I would just do an Ironman?
No. Straight out, no.
I think I'd be quicker to do something like that than a straight up marathon.
You're a cyclist, though, aren't you?
I'm a big cyclist, so I have that down, I'd like to think. I'm not a big runner though. I used to run, same as yourself, cross country, probably the same events actually. I don't know. I come from a cycling kind of background, so I enjoy cycling. You can take in the view a little bit more. It's less laborsome.
Yeah,
you obviously go further distance. I've done a couple hundred K plus events.
Jeez.
Which sounds like a lot, but a marathon is much tougher, like far tougher.
You look like a cyclist, actually. He's got the the tash even.
He does,
He looks like a 1980s cyclist.
He's also got the slim physique.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Been into the Lycra a bit better than some of the middle-aged men.
Yeah, that's true. That's fair enough.
You ever cycle?
No, we did that a thigh for off the ball a few years ago.
Oh, yeah.
Where we had we did a bit of cycling. I think it was like a couple hundred meter swim maybe, and then a 20K cycle and a 5K run.
Okay. You did the full thing though, didn't you?
Grand.
The older lads in the thing cheated.
Oh, some of them did a leg each.
They did a leg each.
Yeah.
And they were like, I did a triathlon.
Yeah. Some of these lads.
No, you did a 5K run.
Yeah.
You swam the length of a pool.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Brian O'Driscoll was there with us and he just did this cycle, I think.
Okay, I'd say he's a strong cyclist.
Strong cyclist, I'd say. Yeah,
he's amazing at everything. We did a darts challenge in here, and he was class at darts.
Yeah,
he's just one of those people.
Yeah, you get those lads who are just natural athletes, naturally so good at everything, and it's even more annoying when they're really smart as well.
Yeah,
and they usually are. In fairness. Yeah, it's ridiculous. Let's just put into context the 33 marathon, 33 days. Thinking back to that one, is there anything else? I did want to mention the headline on the Philly McMahon, Irish Independent. Column today. I know it was a busy weekend of Gaelic Games ahead. We have David Brady on the show from around 9:15. Philly McMahon, Donegal used dark arts, played the victim, and Kerry walked into the trap. And Nicole, you're from Donegal. Right of reply. After last,
I think it's hilarious who this is coming from. Philly McMahon criticising
dark arts.
Dark arts. I think Philly was well used to the dark arts back in the day.
That's why he can speak on it.
Yeah. It was actually very impressive, and probably the bane of Donegal fans' lives at the time, where Dublin were dominating and Donegal were still being criticised as the dark arts team, when everyone could see clear as day. The likes of Philly McMahon, James McCarthy, you know, some of that defence. They were well equipped at the dark arts. And that Jim Gavin said, it's almost the same as, like, do you know when people talk about Pep Guardiola's side and like the Barcelona team, and there was all tiki-taka and passing, but they still had Busquets breaking up play. Yeah. Same with Fernandinho a couple of years ago, that Man City side, and then Rodri. The best sides also need the shithouses who are going to break up the play and stop you getting caught in a counter-attack. So, were Donegal playing the dark arts? I mean, David Clifford elbowed Caelan McGonagall in the face.
I just think it was a physical game. Both teams were up for it at the start.
Both teams were very physical. Both teams were really riled up before it.
Yeah.
And it was Kerry that boiled over. So
I think everyone boiled over a little bit, but I think there was just two teams that, you know, a very recent history from the league final where some unsavory things happened, so both teams were very much up for it. Sometimes that happens again. Yeah. It's just because it's the biggest game of the year so far, and there's a microscope on it that literally happens in every second game of Gaelic football at that level. Like, so,
bit of bites, that's what you want.
Yeah, exactly.
Everyone loves to see it.
In fairness, we're all...
To an extent, until someone...
I don't like to see an uppercut.
Punch in the face.
Yeah, you don't like to see that, but...
It's always the commentary line, isn't it, when the brawl breaks out, oh, we hate to see this, but everyone at home is going... Well,
everyone cheering for more.
This is what actually great. Please keep more of this. YouTube comments from JJVC. My friend just did 250 kilometre marathon across the Moroccan desert, Marathon du Sable.
That's just ridiculous. So impressive. Like,
yeah, you do see these crazy ones that, for some reason, they do it in the most extreme climates as well. And you're wondering, it's hard enough. Why are you making it harder by doing it in the desert?
Dehydrating yourself.
It's funny, us talking about doing a marathon, you know, I almost feel silly talking about doing a marathon when we're talking about lads who've done a 250 kilometre.
It's a great achievement, though.
It is a great achievement. But I remember once talking to another fella about, I just done a skydive. Out of a plane, 10,000 feet, was exhilarated. And a few days later, I was chatting to a guy who had also done one recently, and we were just comparing notes. And this other guy was with us, and he just piped in, and genuinely, seriously, goes, geez, that reminds me of the time I did a trust fall at work. You know, the one of these work career days where we fell backwards, and a colleague had to, and he was comparing jumping out of a plane to falling backwards. So I feel like me and Enda talking about our marathon is the person talking about falling backwards.
Yeah.
And everyone else is like the...
Comparison is... Thief of joy.
Yeah, it's all relative. Like, there's a lad I know from home who runs and he's a runner, like he runs competitively, and we were doing the summer 10K up at home. It's just a charity event that happens, and I was joking with him beforehand because I'd seen some of his times that he was posted, and I said, I suppose you're aiming for about 28 minutes here, are you? And he looked me dead in the eye seriously and said, yeah, I read that. I was joking.
Yeah.
But I think he did it in like 30 minutes.
Some people are just
like 10K in 30 minutes. That he literally did it 20, like maybe 15, 20 minutes quicker than me.
Ridiculous. Yeah. So
people are just equipped in different ways.
Robots.